Kia ora and welcome to Reserved Recommendations. This is a show about great trash, difficult art, and our complicated relationships with art and culture. My name's Hugh, I'm the host of the show, and I'd like to take this opportunity to put in a very mild content warning for the show as a whole. Sometimes our recommendations on this show are reserved just because the thing that we're discussing is in some way not good, but sometimes there are aspects of the art or artist that may be confronting for some people. Check the episode descriptions for more information, and do be aware of your listening environment. Kia ora. It's been a second. This is a solo mini-sode, as you'll have probably guessed from the title. And if you're a new listener, the reason I do these is twofold. Partly it's to explain where I've been if you caught an episode and then I completely vanished, to remind you that in the immortal words of Granny Weatherwax, I ain't dead. Also, it's to make sure that there's something in the feed so it's, you know, obvious to the robot overlords that I ain't dead as well. Look, the really short version is that I had a really strong last couple of episodes with Ash Albine and Josh Borman. Both of those guys were just absolute joys to have as guests, and I really liked those conversations, and those podcasts did really well. And after the high, there must needs be a crash, and so I went into a bit of a period of inactivity as regards this podcast. I need to get back on chasing guests so that I've got more people to talk to or more things to talk them about. But there's been a few other things going on as well as that. I have been doing a bit more work under the moniker Wolfboy in terms of music. You can find all of that at wolfboy.bandcamp.com. Most recently, I put out an old-fashioned double-sided single where one side is actual singing with music and instruments, and the other side is the electronic music that I've been doing for a while. And the idea is that one of those is a reinterpretation of the other. As I say, find that at wolfboy.bandcamp.com. I've also got a couple of projects on the burner with Wolfboy. Ideally, that single will go on to be part of a larger release, which means, of course, I need to then write and arrange and record all of those tunes. I'm doing some work in collaboration with a local life coach and music, what do you call her? A teacher, I suppose. A sort of music as empowerment person. That project, I believe, is going to be called Wildly Held. So watch this space for that, if that sounds appealing to you. All of those things have been taking time and attention, and I am very bad at splitting that over multiple projects simultaneously without, you know, some things going unattended. I also had a really lovely conversation, although I don't think it's going to be published anywhere, it wasn't recorded, with a guy called Skylar, who runs a channel called the ADHDM, which is about the confluence of attempting to DM in the context of like Dungeons and Dragons and ADHD. He did a video on YouTube called Style Over Substance, which looks at things that call themselves role-playing games and you might argue are instead variously transgressive or baffling art projects, and he did a longish segment on normality in one of those, so I had a chat to him about that, because it's always interesting when that project resurfaces and connects with people, and also when they appear to be taking it on its own terms. Actually, a final thing on the Wolfboy count. I had a really nice chat with Jordan Coupe at Radio Control recently about the split single, and I have put that up on the Wolf Boy SoundCloud page rather than the Bandcamp page, just so that you can listen to that if you want. So if you go look on SoundCloud for Wolf Boy in Palmerston North, you will find that. So to get to the meat of the episode, this is a thing that I want to, I've been wanting to talk about for ages, because it's like, it's a recurring issue every election here in New Zealand, and we are coming up on an election. That problem is a specific single guy, and his name is Winston Raymond Peters. Now, the first thing, and this is entirely a digression, is that if you go and research Winston Peters, you will discover via Wikipedia's disambiguation that he is not in fact the only politician named Winston Peters. The other one is Winston Edward Peters. This is Winston Raymond that we are talking about. Winston Edward Peters is from Trinidad and Tobago and is also a Calypsonian under the name Gypsy, which I understand is a slur to some people, so I will avoid saying the word any further. However, that is the name that Winston Edward Peters, born 1952, goes by when he performs as a calypso musician. And born in 1952 means he is in fact younger than our Winston Peters by not quite 10 years. So the thing about politics in New Zealand is that since the 1990s, we have operated under a system called MMP, that stands for Mixed Member Proportional. What it means is that every election, every political party competes for what is called the party vote. The party vote determines essentially the percentage of the seats in parliament that that they get to hold as a party, and then there are a certain number of seats which are electorate seats. So New Zealand is divided up into a number of electorates. There are also Māori electorates for the electoral roll, but that's a complication that we don't really need to get into for you to understand what I'm talking about. Every electorate also votes for who they want to be the MP to represent them in Parliament, but there aren't enough electorate seats for that to have an enormous impact on the makeup of Parliament most of the time, except that there's a rule where if the leader of a party gets into Parliament on the basis of their electorate seat, they can bring a certain number of MPs from their party into Parliament with them, even if the party seat party vote share doesn't really add up to them being able to have a presence in Parliament. So for a long time, that was how the far right ACT Party got to have a presence in Parliament. But also, while that was happening, the ACT Party was such a small presence in Parliament that it doesn't really, you know, it didn't really have an enormous influence on the outcome of what any particular government was doing, or the makeup of any particular government. Because the second important thing to understand here is that the formation of a government happens after the election and the determination of how many seats are in Parliament. So basically, in order to be the government, one party needs to be able to get together enough allied seats in order to hold a majority. And generally speaking, the Labour Party did have an absolute majority during the kind of emergency period around the COVID-19 pandemic, but that's a really, really rare situation. Almost always governments are made up by one or two of the pre-MMP parties. So before we had MMP, it was basically just National and Labour, which equates to Labour and Conservatives in the UK, or very loosely Republican and Democrat, although like both of those are to the right of anything that's possible in New Zealand politics, really. The point I'm making is that I genuinely think that if you're going to have a parliamentary democracy, this is the best way to do it, because it means that you can vote for a minor party and you can expect that that minor party will, to whatever proportion they manage to convince people to get on side, obviously, but will have some influence on what goes on, right? So you can vote for the Greens, and even if the Greens make up a tiny percentage of parliament, though there are people in the parliament who express that point of view, and even if they're not part of the government, when the government does stuff that they don't like, they can jump up and down about it in public, and that's the role of an opposition in a parliamentary democracy anyway. The bug in MMP, though, is that if you have a charismatic person who doesn't really believe anything, then that person can, if they're good at what they do, get themselves into a situation where whoever is looking at forming a government has to deal with them. And then in order to deal with them, we'll have to concede various things to them. And that means that that person will end up wielding a dramatically outsized proportion of power over whatever the makeup of the government is. And that is the situation in which Winston Peters has been more or less uninterrupted since he first founded his party, New Zealand First, in 1993. There was a period where they were almost obliterated, because he played it a little bit too fast and loose with making deals. But he's got better and better at the specific game over time. And that has meant that no matter what, no matter what he says, no matter what he does, no matter to what extent he is consistent with his own past statements or feels any need to justify what he says about his own past statements, he is always a force to be reckoned with in New Zealand politics, and something that you just have to reckon with. And I think this is a bug, and he has expertly identified and exploited this bug. And the only way that MMP can function as intended is for people to stop voting for Winston Peters and New Zealand First. And I think it's tempting to look at Winston Peters, who at the moment is embracing the most foaming style of conspiracy rhetoric. New Zealand First in this last election were the anti-trans party. Leading into the election, they were the anti-vaccine party leading into the election. They consistently just repeat weird bits of culture war that come from America, despite or regardless of whether they actually connect to New Zealand politics at all. Recently, Winston Peters was crowing on social media about the defeat of DEI, which is not a thing that exists in New Zealand. We have had various kinds of anti-discrimination policy in our civil service for a long time, but at no point have any of those ever been called DEI. That is an American piece of terminology, and the reason that he is using it is because it aligns him with the perceived successes of the Trump administration. So it's tempting to look at Winston Peters as a fairly elderly politician now, and to conclude that age is beginning to tell, and that he is in some sense beginning to lose it. But I think it's really important to understand that Winston Peters has, to some extent, always been like this. So he's been in Parliament in New Zealand since 1978. And he really came into his stride in the 1980s, purely off the back of personal charisma, really. And I've met Winston Peters on a couple of occasions because the New Zealand First Party used to use the station where I worked in Dunedin to make a radio show, and Winston was a guest on a couple of occasions in person. And in person, he is intensely charismatic. And despite being incredibly busy and, a national politician, a politician on the national scale, he remembered me on both occasions, which is very disarming. This man is exceptionally good at what he does. And while he is endorsing weirder and weirder positions these days, I don't think he's actually stopped being good at being an intensely charismatic and engaging person face to face. The thing that led to his founding of his own party was that he was essentially turfed out of the National Party for being unable to get along with his own leadership. He was utterly incapable of not getting into fights with the Prime Minister at the time, who was a guy called Jim Bolger. And I think, again, that is a line you can see all the way through to the present day, is that he doesn't suffer anyone he perceives to be a fool. And he also is remarkably calculated about the fights that he intends to pick. I think, really, back in the 1980s, Winston Peters became convinced that Winston Peters should be Prime Minister, and everything that he has done since then has largely been animated by that goal. So I want to look a little bit at New Zealand First, because New Zealand First are a populist party, but what that actually means has changed quite a lot over time. When he first founded the party, populism meant opposition to very aggressive neoliberal economic reforms. There was a period of budgetary policy in New Zealand, which is known as Ruthanasia, after Ruth Richardson, who was its architect. She was a National Party minister, following on from the neoliberal reforms begun by the 1984 Labour Party. I'm going to refer you to two other series of podcasts. There is a great podcast called Juggernaut, which takes you through the 1984 Labour Party, and then the Fourth National Government, which is basically the subsequent National Party government, and tells you the story of this period. And if you want more of that, that is the place to go. That is just an astounding series. And it was the thing that really locked into my mind the idea that Winston has always been like this. In the second series of Juggernaut, which, as I say, looks at the Fourth National Party government, he is a recurring minor character. The story is mostly about Jim Bolger, who was the Prime Minister, and Ruth Richardson, who was the minister responsible for these euthanasia, very, very austere, very aggressive economic policies. But he's this recurring minor character because he keeps coming up and he keeps getting into fights. And he's so good at publicity and is so charismatic that it kind of doesn't matter whether he's on the right or wrong side of history, and he's both a number of times. He's always someone that you need to reckon with, and that intensely charismatic, very individual person is a very dangerous factor in MMP. So earlier I said that I think that Winston Peters exploits a bug in MMP, and that consequently it is incumbent on everybody not to vote for the man. I want to expand on that a little bit, because I think if you listen to this show, you know that I am I vote as left as it is feasible to vote in New Zealand, and I also hold views which put me probably on the radical side of what is allowable in the New Zealand Overton window at the moment. My contention is that doesn't matter in this particular case. If you are left wing, you should not vote for Winston Peters, because Winston Peters at the moment is importing American culture war. He is indulging in TERF behavior. He is empowering a right-wing government to do really awful stuff. And he is engaged in a hyper-focus on the idea of stamping out wokeness, as though that is somehow the most serious problem facing the country at this point in time. So that's pretty obvious, right? But let's assume for a moment that somehow, for some reason, you are in fact violently opposed to the vaccine mandates that Jacinda Ardern's Labour government enacted. You do think that woke has gone too far. You are in favour of, armed police at the gateway to every public bathroom to make sure that the people with the correct genitals go into the correct doors. Firstly, I don't know why you're listening to me. That's a weird thing to do. I'm very sorry. However, you still shouldn't vote for Winston Peters. Winston Peters enacted the vaccine mandates. He was really vitriolic about people who refused to take the vaccine at that time. And that is because Winston Peters is an intensely powerful rhetorician. He is an intensely charismatic man, and he is intensely vitriolic about whatever is the current target of his displeasure. And precisely what those things are shift depending on what he's decided is the current tack that he wants to take. And that is a calculation that he makes roughly every election period. And he will commit 100% to the bit, but only for the duration of that particular 3-year government period until the next election, at which point he makes another calculation and he does it again. So unless you personally just like Winston Peters, you shouldn't vote for the man. It doesn't matter what your politics are. He will not reliably serve those. And again, this is a thing that I learned by listening to Juggernaut Season 2. There are accounts in that podcast from people who were junior MPs in the first term that New Zealand First spent in Parliament. And they talk about making statements to the press about what the party was going to do if they got into power, which they were quite used to doing as junior. I think they were a mix of Labour and National MPs, but in both of those parties, that was a normal thing to do, is that you would talk about what your party wanted to do. And Winston Peters found out what they were doing and absolutely took them to task, because even right at the foundation of the party, his goal, his philosophy was that you should give away as little as possible. You should make as many people as possible think that they will get what you want by voting for you. And then you should make the decisions about what you're actually going to do once you're in a position to bargain with the most powerful party in Parliament. And at that point, you decide what your principles are. So right back to 1993, to the foundation of the New Zealand First Party, Winston Peters has always made up his political persona and what his concerns are going to be for the next 3-year period based on his very astute but completely amoral assessment of where the public mood is at. So right now, he is saying completely mad shit. My contention is that he is doing that because he's assessed that there are enough mad people, not that mad people are a majority, but that there are enough of them, enough angry boomers, that he can use that as a wedge to get himself into a position where people have to deal with it. And he was correct about that. Which, you know, again, if you are a mad, angry boomer and you're listening to me, don't vote for Winston Peters. And also, I'm very surprised that you're listening to me. But he's always calculating. He's always making a play. And he is always, when he appears to be having fights with people, it's always a work, if you want wrestling terminology. He's always looking to stir up controversy so that he's got attention on him at any given moment. He's always willing to say something controversial, and if it turns out to be popular, he'll attempt to enact it. If it doesn't, he'll quietly forget about it. But the key thing for Winston Peters is that Winston Peters should be in power, and preferably Winston Peters should be Prime Minister. And to be honest, I think that the situation that the world is in right now is too dire for us in New Zealand to continue having this man dictate anything to any government, because you simply cannot tell from one election to the next what calculation he is going to make and what consequences that is going to have. So that is my rant, if you like. I'm going to finish by making some recommendations for some other things that you should listen to. Firstly, you should go and listen to my music. You've been listening to an unreleased track while I've been having this conversation with you. That one doesn't have a name yet. As I say, it is unreleased, but it is part of the ongoing project that the split single is from. You can find all of that stuff at wolfboy.bandcamp.com. If you're interested in New Zealand politics history, you really, really need to go and listen to both seasons of Juggernaut. Suspend your judgment. You're gonna find yourself listening to people who you have ideological beef with, but the value is that you get to listen to them explaining what they thought that they were doing on their own terms. And even if those things were very evil, I think there is some value in hearing them explain themselves and just, you know, keeping your judgment in the back of your head so that you can come to your own conclusions. It's very much that kind of project. With regard to Josh Borman, the thing that he is doing with another person called June Sternback is a series called Ill-Conceived. He has a much longer running podcast called The Worst of All Possible Worlds, which is great if you happen to be interested in the specific thing that they're talking about. I don't think it's essential listening because while it's good, there are a lot of kind of lefty, somewhat snarky media criticism podcasts. You are listening to one. The project that he's doing with June is called Ill-Conceived, and it is a deep dive into the global phenomenon of natalism, which is the political tendency that considers falling birth rates to be, or falling birth rates among specific populations, to be the biggest political problem of our time, and adopts or suggests the adoption of various strategies to try and combat that. That show is absolutely essential listening because so much of why the world is the way it is, it's not necessarily caused by the people that Josh and June are discussing, but it's often highly related to them in a variety of ways. And for a local example, Winston Peters, who I've just been talking to you for half an hour about, has within the last month been talking about the way in which demographic change here in New Zealand is going to lead to the country being dominated by Indian migrants, which is straightforwardly the kind of argument that the natalists that June and Josh study will use when they talk about concepts that can be sort of grouped together into the white supremacist conspiracy theory, the Great Replacement. Anyway, that is all from me for now. Look after yourselves. You've been listening to Reserved Recommendations, a radio show and podcast from Manawatū People's Radio, Te Reo Irirangi o ngā tangata o Manawatū. The show was produced and presented by me, Hugh Dingwall, and I also composed our theme music. It's called Sack Jazz, and you can find it at wolfboy.bandcamp.com. If you enjoyed this show, why not go ahead and share it with a friend? You can find the last 10 episodes of this show at npr.nz/show/reserved on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you get your podcasts. If you want an episode older than that, try searching for Reserved Recommendations on YouTube. You can find me at Objective Reality on Blue Sky, or send emails to objectivereality@gmail.com. You can also follow Reserved Recommendations on Facebook or Instagram. And finally, Manawatū People's Radio is a non-profit community access station. If you like this or any other piece of their fine audio programming, why not fling them a dollar or two? You can go to npr.nz/donate for more information on how to do that.